George on vacation in Florida, missing his chance at a strong winter storm. Our guest co-host in command and control, Amanda Cost of the Spruce Run Woman Care Alliance. Would you care to say good morning to Governor Paula Page in the Blaine House, holding on line three?
I'd be happy to. Good morning, Governor Paula Page. How are you this morning?
Wonderful, Amanda. And yourself?
I'm doing well. I'm a little jealous, though, because I don't have fresh syrup to put on my
flapjacks
or the snow that's coming in this big storm. And I think you maybe do.
I know. It's tough to be you, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Or tough to be you.
Wasn't it maple? You tapped the maple tree outside the Blaine House this past weekend?
That's right. Yesterday, in fact.
And how long before are you actually going to be turn that into Aunt Jemima?
Well, I would expect with the weather we're having, it's going to be a while because you need warm days and cold nights. And right now we're having cold days and cold nights.
Right, mm-hmm. So it won't be flowing. But down there in Washington, D.C., where you were recently, I think there were some cherry blossoms on the tree. So different
that
scenery.
Was incredible. That was incredible. And that's probably, they're all going to freeze off the trees today, I hear.
We just played a soundbite from Health and Human Services Secretary Tom Price reacting to the Congressional Budget Office and its estimate of the number of Americans that would lose their health insurance coverage, their subsidized health insurance coverage under the Republican health care plan. You met with Tom Price when you were down there, sir?
Yeah, I did. And I'm trying to get the administration to understand one of the false narratives in this whole debate. What I'm trying to tell them is there should be a law against people who have commercial supplied insurance from their employers to drop it so they can get it free. And I were told them able-bodied people who are working should not just go to work and cancel their health insurance because they can get it for free. That's not what Medicaid is about. Medicaid is about helping the elderly, the disabled, women and children that cannot get insurance. And when you can, it should not be a green light to just cancel it. And that's where my concern is. And we felt it at MARDS. And that has a double whammy when people do that. What it does, it increases the census. It reduces the number of people in the being insured at the company and increases the rates, because usually the people that do not give up their insurance are people that need it and use it. And therefore, the use is up, and therefore the census numbers get worse, and so the insurance rates for the commercial market go up, and then on the other side, taxes go up to make up for people who are, dropping out of the markets and going to a tax-free system. Going to a premium-free system because it's Medicaid. And that's my only objection. That, I believe, there should be work rules in the system that if you're able to work and it's available at your employer, then you buy it at your employer. Now, that's not to say we can't have subsidies.
Is that a problem that we're seeing here in Maine?
Oh, it's a massive problem. Matter of fact, Amanda, when we expanded back in 2002, I believe, there was 194,000 people on Medicaid, and there was 110,000 people uninsured. After we expanded, when I got here in 2011, there was 354,000 people on Medicaid and 110,000 people uninsured. It never moved the needles to the uninsured. So what that means is people just dropped their insurance and got the state to pay for it. It's a massive problem. In fact, that's the majority of the increase to Medicaid expansion in Maine came from people who gave up their insurance.
Okay, so we suffered that woe back when we first expanded Medicaid, MaineCare in Maine. Did you describe that to Tom Price as a warning?
I described it to Tom Price. He's very sensitive to it. I've also been in contact with the president and the vice president. That's not where the problem is. The problem's in Congress, because Congress, like legislators, they worry about the next election and not good public policy.
Now, you did have a chance, we understand, to meet with Senator Rand Paul.
Yeah, there's Senator Rand Paul and Congressman Jordan and Meadows, and they're on board. They understand it. They're willing to do the great fight. But the problem is, because Congress is a two-year cycle and the election's next year already, despite the fact we just came off an election and we promised we'd fix it, they're still looking at next election, and it really concerns me a great deal. And when I spoke to the people on the Hill that were counting names, they said to me, If it's a concern to you, where's your delegation? So our delegation, all four members of our delegation, took a position and never called the state to see, except for Bruce Poliquin, after we made a fuss, did they call us and say anything about what's going on. In fact, now I'm inviting them to come and see what the dilemma is and where the problem is. And I'm very, very concerned that they're saying this is a federal issue, but it affects our state, and they should weigh in and see what the problems are.
We understand that you wanted to, you had hopes of meeting, and there's a Breitbart article that mentions it. You'd wanted to meet with Paul Ryan, but that didn't, maybe you got to talk with one of his whips, but you didn't get to meet with Paul Ryan.
That is correct.
Do you predict that Paul Ryan is perhaps resistant to hear your concerns? Had he heard your concerns, might the Republican help your plan?
He's in a tough position, you know. He's in leadership, and he's got to run a caucus, and the caucus is worried about the next election. It's human nature here. They're all self-preservation. It's not about good public policy, and that's what's sad about both Congress and the legislature in Maine. It's about getting reelected, not about doing what's right.
So I understand that you sent a letter along to Paul Ryan, hoping to get a response from that. Did you hear anything in response to the letter? No. So what do you think needs to be put in place here to fix this?
I think it's very simple. You have to have a work rule in the system that if your employer provides it, your insurance, that Medicaid is the source of last resort. It's the insurance of last resort or the welfare of last resort. If you can't get insurance anywhere else, you can get on Medicaid. If you have an option to get insurance, you have to take it. Now, if it's too expensive, I do agree there should be a provision in the law that allows for subsidies to people that are out. But you know, with a $9 minimum wage, the state of Maine, for an individual now, the state of Maine is above the federal poverty line, so everybody qualifies for the exchanges. So I'm really concerned that they're ignoring that. And the other thing, I think that this is what the law reads, and this is another fallacy of this law. The law says we will allow you to expand until 2020. If you want to expand, continue to expand. But in 2020, we're going back to the old FMAP prior to Obamacare, which means that we can expand to 400,000 people, but we're going to go from a 90-10 to a 60-40 split in 2020. And that's itched in the law, and nobody's willing to budge on that, which, quite frankly, I don't blame them, because you can't go a 90-10 because the country's already in a $21 billion, trillion dollar deficit. I have a hard time saying trillion. I never thought we'd get there.
No one should. I know, Amanda, you've got a question that you want to lob to the governor. Can I ask one more thing about one more thing about your trip to Washington? You talked with people about the dangers of expanding healthcare, but you also shared some of your experience in welfare reform. And I know they're closely tied, but
and in fact, we got a much better reception because that was the administration. The administration was absolutely wonderful on both the Medicaid expansion and welfare reform. They really do like our what we've done in Maine with welfare reform. In fact, they've asked us to send them a white paper so that they can take a look at it and see if we can't bring some of those issues to the national level. So they're very, very interested. And the other thing that I don't want to fail to mention here, because I think it's very, very important, it's probably the most successful piece of our trip, was Tom Price was very, very receptive to our case about Riverview. And they're looking into whether or not it wasn't a political retaliation because we did not expand, and that's what we claim. This was a move by the Obama administration to poke us in the eye, and we believe that it was nothing but a political move. And there's plenty of evidence, and they're going to research that, and we are likely, I'm going to predict that they're going to be sensible, common-sense people, and we're going to get Riverview recertified.
Well, that's interesting news.
We'll watch for a timeline on that to see when you might hear something from them.
I'm telling you, that is a big, big issue. And he was very receptive to Mary May. Mary Mayer made a case on how it all evolved and what happened, and their jaws hit the table.
So, Governor, bringing it back home yet again, we know that one of the big issues we have here in the state of Maine is dealing with drug addiction, and in particular, opiate addiction. And someone reached out to me from the Penobscot Nation Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Center and said, wanted me to ask the question, how would this affect people without insurance who we are struggling to get into rehab right now, who are on methadone replacement treatment?
It has no effect at all whatsoever. Drug addiction and rehabbing has nothing to do with insurance. That is a freebie that the state gives. We spend $80 million a year of general fund money. Now listen to me, $80 million a year on drug rehab. And you know the problem, Amanda, is you can't force them into rehab. It's not like you can put people in prison. We can't do that. They either come or they don't get in. And the problem is with heroin and fentanyl, that is a drug that is so vicious, so bad, that even the experts are telling us, that those that treat them are saying that it's a problem that they're dealing with that is very, very serious. Opiate addiction, we have a very, a reasonably good success rate of getting people off the first and second or third time. With heroin, it's a 90-10 split. 90% will die and 10% will survive. And that's where we're at right now. And so it's not about insurance when it comes to this deadly drug.
Well, the big concern that this person was bringing up is that it's often tough to get them into rehab other than methadone, that might keep them more stable for a longer period of time in their life.
Okay, and if you have methadone with a clinical aspect at the methadone clinic, I'm all in. But if you have methadone and they spend 5 minutes a week to go in, run in, get their drugs for the week, and then you find it on the streets by mid-afternoon, no dice.
So it's the additional treatment after. It's counseling along with the treatment.
If you get counseling in the clinic, I'm in. But methadone clinics have proven not only here in Maine but nationally, without a significant clinical aspect to it, it doesn't work.
So how do people without health insurance get those services?
They just go to the methadone clinic that have a clinical aspect,
and then
free.
They'll get both.
Well, we're not finding it to be that easy for folks in our area.
I don't understand. I mean, I don't understand. The methadone clinic has to have a clinical aspect, and if they don't, they shouldn't be in business.
I was going to say we have three methadone clinics in the greater Bangor area. We know at least one that does have counseling services with it.
We do, but the services aren't there for the need that exists.
Oh, so you're saying that we have to put more money into it. So when is it enough money to solve this problem? If somebody could tell me that, then we'll have that debate.
Well,
and then the other debate is we're building a 200 bed facility in Windham. Now, Amanda, I will tell you this. I want you to listen very carefully. I have been trying to do that now for 6 years, and if the Democrats in the House and the Senate would have listened 6 years ago when we started this mess, they'd be getting treated today. But it wasn't until last year, because it was election year, that they caved and gave it to us. So this is not about me. This is about bad public policy. It's what I was saying earlier. It's about elections. It's not about good public policy. We all agree that we should have had that facility and we should have been treating, and that facility should be tied into our county jails, and we would have an inpatient of 200 beds, and we'd have an outpatient of every single county jail in the system. We'd be tied to it, and we'd be having treatment. But the Democrats, for years, fought me. And now they turn around and say, oh, it's the governor, it's the governor, it's the governor. No, it's not the governor. And to one thing, I'd like to say one thing about what you said earlier about the Penobscot Nation. If they have a problem with domestic violence, then let us in and we'll take care of it.
Maine governor.
Because we can put them in jail, and while they're in jail, we can put them into a rehab program in the jail.
Maine Governor Paula Page in our conversation. Thank you so much, sir. A good week to you, and we'll look forward to talking with you next week, sir.
Very good.